Hey, good afternoon, Mike and Sarah from Cliff Curran Farms. Thanks for having me again.
Appreciate Likewise,
for swinging on over.
Yeah,
it's always good having you.
Yeah, great being here. Like you said earlier, Sarah, about like last time, I mean, it was like 100 degrees in the airstream.
Yeah.
And then today, on my way here, it was negative 17.
So yeah, it's cold today for sure.
Both sides of the weather.
And yeah.
I mean, it's been within, I mean, I guess it's 2023, I guess, the first time we sat down. But, it's been within 12 months, right?
Since I think it's like six.
Yeah, about six. July.
Yeah.
Like July was
so almost exactly 6 months ago.
Oh,
which is crazy.
It is crazy. And the stuff you guys have done, I mean, just watching you guys on social media before I even like came back here,
mm-hmm.
like just huge. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Like all your guys' updates. And I love watching the videos you guys put up on what you guys are doing here at the farm. And I mean, like it's more than doubled. I don't know what you guys would say.
Quadrupled,
yeah.
I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. And when we get like those tents that we're showing you that aren't online yet, we just got a few more things to get for those, and once those are online,
mm-hmm.
we'll basically be at max production.
Oh wow.
For this facility.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And we're trying to work out a deal to actually get the other wing of this building.
Oh really?
So this space over there.
Wow,
yeah, so now, that's in the works right now.
That's incredible. Like we were talking just a little earlier, like 6 months, you know, like in any industry to grow that
mm-hmm.
that much, I mean, you guys are doing awesome. And
absolutely.
And I mean, it's like there's definitely a need for it for sure, obviously, as you guys are growing, but also like the the hard work and the research you guys put in to be able to like also sustain it, because like you guys were saying earlier, like not busy enough for you, but
busy.
Yeah,
yeah, our growth has definitely, I mean, there's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
Especially these last like 4 months, where it's like, can we actually do this? And it's like, no, we can't just out of pure stubbornness.
Yeah, just positive.
Yeah,
we got it.
Yeah, optimism and stubbornness, I think, has really carried us as far and as fast as we have been going. So
totally.
It's one of those where it's almost failure is not an option. We've got so much time and money invested in it, it's like we can't walk away. We have to make sure it succeeds one way or another. Like I was telling you earlier, so she's at the farm full time, I'm at the farm full time,
mm-hmm.
and that's only been since the 26th of December.
Yeah, so right after Christmas, I'd taken a jump and was like, all right guys, here's my 1 month notice. I'm done after Christmas, and whether it's gonna stress us out more financially, so be it. Because he was coming home, just you could see it on him, like just the stress and the pure exhaustion of trying to be here.
Yeah. She would get here at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
She would work till about 6:30.
Yeah.
I'd get here about 5:30. We'd kind of talk for a few minutes, kind
a
of in
bit,
passing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She'd go home, take care of the kids.
Yep.
Get them off school. She goes to work, and then I'm here by myself, running everything and sterilizing and all that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wouldn't get out of here till 7 o'clock at night.
Sometimes 10.
And that's,
just depending.
Yeah. And that's every day.
Man.
We haven't had a day off in over a year.
Yeah, it's been well over a year that we've had a whole day off.
Jeez, man.
Yeah.
And if you guys were passionate about it,
passion carries you for sure.
It's one of them where we have to do it.
I mean,
it's not like, oh boy, maybe I'll just kind of.
You got to make it or make it. That's it.
You just got to get it done, and you have to do it.
Yeah, totally. And
so,
like all the things you guys were talking about earlier, to make the whole, every part of this thing grow, you know. And it's,
mm-hmm.
You hear people talk about their business being like another baby. And
that's
what it sounds like for you guys, sure. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we're like in the toddler stages now.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
starting to walk a little bit.
Yeah. Getting into everything. And the stress level of that is definitely, And then hopefully we'll have a full-fledged adult here, in the next couple of years. So.
Well, and like you guys were just telling me about the growing pains, too, like just the lion's mane, coming up a different color all of a sudden and being like, what in the world?
Yeah, that was, having pink lion's mane and not knowing exactly what it was. We're like researching, and then it's like, oh, this person said this, but this person said that. And then we just had to like, okay, let's try our oxygen flow. Okay, that did better. Our humidity, okay. Temperature, was that it?
Yeah.
And then, I just tweaked it.
Yeah, but it bounced back pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
great.
The thing with mushrooms is they're so resilient. As long as you give them what they want, they'll produce really good, high-quality mushrooms for you. You just got to be able to find out what they want.
Yeah, totally. And like we were talking, actually goes to something I wanted to talk about too, is like the how we were talking about the patience and then just the communication. Like they're, mm-hmm. they're telling you that you just
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, they'll tell you. Yeah. They'll tell you if they're not happy. Yep. And then you, it's up to you to figure out why they're not happy and yeah. make them happy. And then they just snap out of it and they're beautiful.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. Like you said, the resiliency to be able to, because like, I didn't see the pink side of them, but I see them now. And like you said, it looks they're just gorgeous. Like beautiful lines.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, you should have seen it last week. It was horrible.
Yeah. Just, I couldn't imagine. I was on the brink of tears. Like, yeah.
Because I think I put in, it was like 60 or 70 blocks.
Yeah, it was,
and then
yeah.
to watch them just struggle.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of time and a lot of money. That's like, you're supposed to be going to someone's house.
Yeah. You're supposed to be feeding somebody. Why are you doing yeah. this?
Once we figure out that airflow, yeah. it's like, oh my gosh. And then we're high-fiving and dancing around.
Yeah. Like, oh, look, they're so pretty now.
Yeah. Oh, gorgeous. Well, and the thing is, too, because you guys hadn't changed anything. So all of a sudden, have something like change, you know, on the production side of things, like the color, you're like,
yeah, and Mike actually completely flipped over into a new tent thinking it was the tent.
Oh, yeah.
And then rerouted all of the exhaust and everything. And then it was like, okay, they're still not. And so I was like, let's open up this and open up that. And he was like, okay, let's try to, you know, make sure that the CO2 was okay. And found out it wasn't okay. And that we needed to adjust the oxygen, you know, differences and the airflow. So,
yeah, I got to figure it out. How about how long was the whole process until you guys got it turned around? A few days or?
About a week.
Yeah.
That would be a rough week.
Yeah, it was.
Bananas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were too.
Yeah, it was a struggle, but we figured it out.
Yeah.
And it was just those simple things like telling you, you know, showing you putting that box fan in front of that fresh airport that was inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, and you could feel before that, you can feel because we have so much suction through the tents with our exhaust system going out the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be, you know, feeding the fresh air in. Well, I just don't know if that port's not big enough or what, but as soon as we put that box fan in front of it to suck more air in and then open up a couple ports, they just, within the next day, you could see.
Yeah, I was like, oh, they're turning white. Yeah. And then the next couple of days, it was like, okay, this is it. That's all they needed.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Especially the investment, the time, like to get to that point where they're in the blocks you called them, right?
Yeah.
To get them to that stage, I mean, it is like a little baby, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, now it's healthy and growing.
Yeah, because that's a lot of time and money because, you know, it all starts with the grain spawning, you know, soaking the grain, sterilizing the grain.
Mm-hmm.
Take it in the lab. She inoculates the grain. It's 2 weeks for that to get
colonized. To colonize.
And then we're making the blocks, sterilizing those, and then taking the grain in the blocks, and the whole process
is like a month long.
It's like, geez, we can't afford to have all you just go to hell.
So, wow, man. I mean, we talked about it last time and a little bit today, but like, I mean, it could be such a razor's edge if like something. And even out of your control, but even like something in your control, if you like, didn't know you're doing it, like, you know, say like me, if I was doing it and I was getting a little sloppy on something, and all of a sudden, like you said, you wipe out a month of work. Oh man, like, you know, put in like even just a normal 9-to-5 terms, like a month could be two paychecks for like most people.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like two paychecks gone.
Gone, you know?
When we have our CSAs and working with some of the, you know, restaurants and stuff that we do.
And now we're partnering with the co-op.
Oh, cool.
So.
Yeah, they're wanting their mushrooms.
Yeah.
You know, they expect us
on time.
Which they should. They expect us to deliver mushrooms on time. Quality mushrooms. That's our job. That's what this farm's about. And when you have a whole tent just going to hell, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a good
thing. It's heart wrenching.
But
yes,
life of a farmer.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point, man. And like you said, and not just with mushrooms either, just with anyone's farm, you know, like it dealing with whatever might come up, and luckily you guys are in control, so you don't have to worry about like hail or dust storms or something. You never know what could get introduced on accident. But I mean, you guys, and that would be like me pulling my hair out if I were in your guys' shoes, because like you guys walked me through the process today, and it's, you know, so clean, so sterile. The whole process is meticulous, and then to have all of a sudden something like that.
It's like, where did we screw up?
Going bases covered, you know, like from start to finish, and it'd been working, you know.
Yeah, and that's what's weird is, like the fruits before that, everything was looking great, and then all of a sudden, it just went to hell. It's like, how can everything be perfect, and then the next day or the next round of blocks that I put in there, they're just crap.
They're coming out pink.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we were thinking of everything, you know, all the heat, humidity, air, all that, and then even the mycelium.
Yeah, like,
I mean,
did you do a different strain? I was like, no, it's the same strain we've had for months.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing. And
yeah. And there's so many steps. It's like, what step did we miss? What step got screwed up? So yeah, mm-hmm. you're thinking all the way through the like the production area, all the way through the lab and everything, and it's like, there's a step in here that we are missing that is going to help us, but we just have to keep calm and figure it out.
Yeah.
Because we get a little testy sometimes.
I can totally see it. Like, even with me, like, in the editing part, you know, because that's, like, the most time-consuming thing for me, typically, because this is all fun. Like,
right.
Pick your guys' brain on this cool stuff. Like, I'm not going to get into mushroom farming, but it is super interesting to me because, you know, I'm a mushroom enthusiast, as we talked about last time, but, like, to see the process and to see, like, all the things, like you said, even the problem-solving of the pink mushroom, it's like, man, this is so cool to me. So, like, this part is fun, but then I get into the editing part, and I'm like, you know, the process, and it's like, if something, like, you're just trimming a clip or something little tiny, and I'm like, why is this not working? Or if, like, the volume, you know, the video and the audio get off.
Mm-hmm.
This has been the same for months. You know, almost 2 years now. I'm like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You know? And that's even, like, way smaller of a process. I got, like, five things that probably went wrong. I could, like, backtrack. But you guys got, like, probably 100 things, huh?
Lot. I mean, even, like, with this new sterilizer we built, we're really hoping that we're cooking it long enough. At 20 hours, and we won't know until, you know, the bags get fully colonized. They're either going to get colonized with mycelium or mold.
Oh,
yep.
And so, you know, we did the first batch was like 70, and then I did 107 a couple days ago, and then she inoculates them. So, you know, that's 214 pounds of substrate. Which is 107 pounds of oak, 107 pounds of soy, all the time. The bags, everything, and we're hoping that that's long enough.
Yeah.
And then if it's not, the whole 100's toast goes in the trash.
Yeah.
And then we cook it longer to see. So it is those little steps.
Yeah.
It's like,
and then like you lose like all that product, all that time. Oh
yeah.
Man, brutal. Well, no, like you guys were telling me earlier about there's no like, you know, map or blueprint for this, you know, like there's a little bit like you guys are picking up from the community, but then like that, you know, just, you know, 20 hours good enough? Well, trial and error, find out.
Bootstrapping for sure.
Bootstrapping, yeah.
And when we're on like YouTube searching, you know, how to build these sterilizers and stuff, and there's even everyone will say it, there's no set time. Okay, you've got this many, you know, pounds at this temperature, blah blah blah. They're like, we just do it between 20 and 24 hours. So it's like, that's 4 hours. It's a lot of time.
Yeah.
Where I could be doing something to actually get another load going or something.
Yeah.
So is it 20? Is it 24? Is it 18? Maybe. You know, because there's some guys out there that's like, oh, I do it for 20, but that might be a little overkill. I could probably do it for less.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's no set numbers except for, like, your temperature, humidity, what they kind of need to be.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, sterilizing and stuff, it's just trial and error.
Yeah,
I mean, everything, almost everything is trial and error when it comes to these.
Dang. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so wild. Because, like you said, you shave off... You know, like, if it's 24 hours, and then you could be going at 18 hours, you know, if you end up cooking at 24, you know, because it's just what you went with. Like, like, so that's 6 hours, where, like, you'd be doing a bunch of stuff in six hours.
Yeah, you can.
But, yeah, even if you, you know, 20 to 18, that's 2 hours, extra hours, you know, to do other stuff, you know, around here.
Yeah.
Or maybe take a coffee break.
Yeah, exactly.
Or that could be a whole cool down time to cool the blocks. Where I can actually open it up and put another round in and all that, because we're trying to maximize our total output of this building. We're trying to use every square inch. We're trying to use every minute. And so when we have demand for 600 pounds a week, then I have to get creative then on how fast I can turn around on the substrate and how to sterilize it.
Yeah.
Like this morning, it was done at 7 this morning. I cracked it, I shut it off, cracked it open a little bit, got a little fan in there just to try to cool them down a little bit, try to get a lot of that steam to just condense in the bottom, and then get it cool enough where I could take them out, put the other ones in, and actually vacuum out the bottom and all that stuff, because there's steps in that. But it's just getting that extra...
like hour. Yeah, an hour difference is like a grace around here.
You know, when we're trying to produce so much...
Mm-hmm.
Out of what we have, you have to become creative to maximize and get the most efficiency out of your equipment and everything.
Jeez. And then like you said, you guys are building stuff. Like it's kind of like a little bit of a like a bubble that you guys have in there, right? So like when you got, at least that's how I was interpreting when you guys were telling me, like with the humidity, you know, with the new sterilizer, it's like now you got more humidity you're introducing, so you're trying to figure out how to mitigate that. Like,
Like
you add something, but then you gotta like do something
else.
And humidity, and I'll kind of admit to a fault in a way, I get super anal about my processes and stuff.
But as a consumer, I like that.
And I don't know really if the humidity hurts it a ton.
Yeah.
But if I could have a baseline on the humidity in the building itself, then I can control the humidity in the tents better. Mm-hmm. Same with like with the CO2 level.
Yeah.
If I know the exact CO2 level in the facility, and then I can control the CO2 level in the tents a lot better because I know what I'm starting with.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if I really need to do it that way, but my mind, I need to do it that way.
Yeah, well, and then you got concrete things, right, to kind of pivot off of, it feels like to me, you know, like then, like, well, I know this, so then this is this. Versus, and with all this being a lot of the trial and error stuff, at least then you got, like, some hard points to go off of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's how it would work, too, I think.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah, because if I can eliminate, you know, things off my checklist where it could be from the start and get those cemented in, you know, a certain parameter, and then all the other little things are a little easier to handle.
Yeah.
But it is hard, like we were talking back there. It's hard right now because we've been upgrading so much and so frequent that we really don't have a baseline for most of the stuff we do back there. I mean, even the flow. We just got this set up. Well, hell, I just started cooking in the new sterilizer last week.
Yeah.
And the tents... Yeah. Yeah, all the tents, the sterilizer, all that, all the new stuff got put in within the last 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Man, it seemed like before, like when we first talked, it was almost every 2 to 3 weeks we were adding a tent.
And rearranging and trying to,
stuff. And so we have yet to have like 2 solid months where everything is set and we're just running.
Dang.
It's just...
And
it's,
I don't know if we'll ever get there.
No, that's what I was going to say. Just from, you know, a little bit of time. I've known you guys. It doesn't seem like it's going to slow down at all.
No. And, I mean, we'll get to a point where we have to, like, hire and train, and then that's a whole nother...
Yeah.
That's a whole nother realm. Managing other people and whatnot, so...
Yeah, trust. You know, you know,
that's a big part.
Can, run your business and do it and have the same kind of care, right?
Yeah, and passion behind it.
Even with me, like I thought about trying to outsource like my editing at least to somebody else, you know, even like a friend, but even then, like, they wouldn't really know like why I want to keep something in there or what is important to me, you know. So it's like, I don't know,
it's a hard juggling to do.
Yeah.
It's like, at what point do we have to?
Yeah, you guys are going to be forced. Like, I could probably do it myself forever, but you guys are probably going to be forced into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, you guys were telling me just a little bit ago, like, the blocks and how you guys cut them even, and how you get the fruiting body right out of them.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there's might be some room to maximize that more, but you guys don't even have time to try and error that, right?
Yeah.
I've kind of played with, because we've did a few different...
like the X versus the star versus straight.
Yeah, just different cuts and stuff like that. Because what we're trying to do, so you have your block, I'm not sure if we talked about this last time, but a full 100%, you should be able to get 100% efficiency out of a block.
Yeah.
So what that means is I have 2 pounds, a pound of oak and a pound of soy. Excuse me. And so 100% efficiency is that I should be able to get 2 pounds of mushrooms out of that block. But that's through multiple fruitings. So you can fruit, like blues, you could fruit, I know two, but sometimes three.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so...
The fruit you harvest, you keep it in there, and the fruits again.
Yep, it'll fruit again.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, until it maximizes all the nutrients in that block, and then it's just spent.
And lion's mane is notorious for you can get until the block shrinks up. It'll just keep fruiting, and they'll get smaller and smaller and smaller, and then you'll get a little tiny, you know, little lion's mane.
That's
but,
cool. A little something to take home to dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
But the problem with that is when we're trying to run so many mushrooms through, mm-hmm. it's hard to have the room to have second fruitings on those blocks.
And justify it.
Yeah, because we've got, you know, fresh blocks ready to go in.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we know we need to maximize it. And so what I'm trying to do is figure out different cuts on the bag to maximize that first fruiting, that first harvest. So if we're getting, say, 11 ounces on the first harvest of a blue, maybe I can cut the bag different where it wants to actually use more of the block and the nutrients in it on that first fruit, on that first harvest.
Yeah.
And I could get like a pound, 3 ounces.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's really trying to learn that and figure out what's going to work best for us is kind of what we're starting to do now.
Yeah.
Since things
got a little bit of breathing room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of that, you know, because it all comes down to money, you know, because it costs so much to make those blocks and we need, you know, the highest return on them.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to keep a second block if there's no room and then we just throw it in the trash.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I know.
And
I
that's
can
the that,
out of
that's
it.
The only tension point between us.
Oh,
it's like, because I'm pro second fruit, he's pro first fruit, and it's like,
yeah.
We got it. I mean, for, you know, our profit margin, we have to do second fruits. He's like, we don't have the space.
Yeah,
it's like, that's true.
Yeah.
We don't, but can we?
Yeah.
If we had tents set up that was just for second fruitings, that'd be awesome.
That's exactly what Brandon's going.
Yeah,
yeah, there's some way.
But it's just, we're just producing so much now that we don't even have enough rack space for what we've got.
And for folks who are listening to this and maybe aren't following you guys, like, they need to follow Swift Current Farms on Instagram, and what else are you guys on?
Facebook
and Instagram.
Cool.
We'll soon be launching our YouTube too.
Oh, cool.
And kind of
we're thinking about doing the podcast.
We talked about it last time.
Definitely
guys should.
Because
for folks who, you know, the blocks are in the tents, and you can just go online and to your guys' Instagram and Facebook and see all that.
And that's what these guys are before they're cut open to fruit. The same thing. These are just inoculating blocks. So that's what, when we talk about fruiting blocks or blocks, that's what we're talking about.
Here we are. That's cool.
So
folks can get a visual on that, and then, you know, go to your guys' channel and check out more of that stuff.
It's a lot of fun.
So, it is hard to explain to people because there are so many steps to this, because this is a whole different type of farming that most people know about.
Yeah.
And it is kind of hard to explain.
You got to put it in language that people can, like, translate to, like, traditional farming. So like when I tell people about our grain spawn, I just have to say it's kind of like mushroom seeds that I spread throughout substrate, and that then I can make that connection of like, oh, okay, it's mycelium grain that is a seed that they plant to make but
and
it's
the,
not
totally the substrate itself, it's like we're building the dirt,
the soil.
It's like a bag of dirt that we build. It's oak and soy,
and it's really, really highly nutritious for mushrooms and for mold. So those are two competing organisms that love the same thing, and that's what we try to mitigate through the sterilization and our sterility and our processes, is to make sure that we're not growing more mold than we are mushrooms like we were when we first started.
Went
through it was like, oh, you're green, that means you like your bag of mold.
It's a different color.
Darn it. Where did we screw up?
I have to be able to keep up with what you guys do, and even just like we talk about the problem solving and all that. I would be like living on lion's mane, I think, if I were you guys.
And it's fun. It's like one of those, like, it tests us every week on something different, and like really pushes us to like I don't know, find it in ourselves to just keep going and keep pushing. And then I get the reward. Mike's not the market guy. He doesn't thoroughly enjoy going to the market. It's not his gig, man. And that's fine. But that's what gives me energy, is like people either taking our tinctures or eating our mushrooms, and they come back and they're like, this is the dish I made. And they show me and they're like, oh, it was so good. Or I'm starting to feel better because we're taking your tinctures and whatnot. That gets me going and gets me pushing. And then he feeds off of my energy because I come back and he's like, he just sits down and he like just lets me. I met this person.
Yeah, so who'd you talk to?
Exactly. Because he knows I'm just going to be like, woo!
Cool. Yeah. Probably get a bunch of return customers too. They like.
Oh yeah, yeah. We've got a pretty solid following, and just getting to know people, and even just talking, because I'm also super passionate about local agriculture and nutrition and health and wellness, and so we have kind of this conglomerate of people coming up and not just asking about like what the tinctures and the polysaccharides that are in the tinctures, what they're doing to their bodies, but also like, oh, I saw you made a post about raw milk from the farmer down the road. And it's like, yeah, I did. And it's great. And Katie is awesome. And so and then I give him a cart. And so it's like that, building that community outside of just like the mushrooms is what I'm passionate about, and the medicinal side of it. But Mike definitely feeds off of that for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's super cool. And like you said, it's all part of that. Like we kind of talked about last time about the community, but like just like little slices of pie, you know? Like
absolutely.
You know, like the mushrooms and then the milk, you know? And it's all of us, I think, we're all trying to get better health, you know? Like
whether it's
a disease like mine with Crohn's, you know? Mm-hmm. So you know, talk to you guys and see, you know, like what you guys know about, you know, different health things with mushrooms and medicinals. And then, you know, I think we talked last time about the milk too, because I heard, I think it was Laird Hamilton, big wave surfer a long time ago, said something about like, you know, problems we're drinking this dead milk.
And it is.
It's never even put it in that, my brain never thought of it that way. I was like, oh.
A pasteurized or any kind of like homogenized milk, it's dead. Yeah. It's like drinking water.
Yeah.
You might get a little bit of calcium, but the calcium has been broken up into a form your body can't take in. So if anybody is not drinking raw milk is, I'm super passionate about raw milk and raw dairy because it's set up in a way on a molecular level that allows your body to take it in. Yeah. And if you get gentle pasteurization, unhomogenized milk, that's your second best.
Oh, really?
If you go into the supermarket and it's like highly processed, like ultra pasteurized, you're just drinking water, like colored water. It's not going to help your gut. It's not going to help your body.
No, like you said, all the good stuff for your gut, you know, all the live,
the enzymes that are in raw milk and the amino acids, the chains haven't been broken, so your body can, I mean, they're bioavailable to you.
Yeah.
And outside of, I think there was one study of a nutritionist, and she took all of the major milks. So you had everything from oat milk, almond milk, goat milk, cow's milk, raw, pasteurized. She did a whole gamma of them. And I wish I would remember the researcher's name, but she found the closest thing to human milk, which is, are the milk that we should really be consuming, but you know, ethically it's not. The next best is raw goat milk, and then the next best is cow's milk, and that has to be, that's on a molecular level.
Yeah.
She was looking at the molecular levels of like how your body processes it,
which makes sense to me, because even like sometimes little kids, when they're having trouble with breast milk or you know, just like dairy, you know, even if it is non-pasteurized, they go to goat's milk and they usually don't seem to have an issue with it, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And then even like, because I had a daughter, we have a daughter that's super sensitive to like processed milk. I'm going to say processed milk where it's, you know, ultra pasteurized and not raw.
Yeah.
She was even like, the red milk that comes in the jug, because we drink cold milk, and I had to wean him off of like skim milk, because I was like, that's even worse for you, man. If you're going to drink anything, it's whole milk. And she started noticing an immediate difference. She's like, that milk and Kate's milk doesn't hurt my tummy. And it's like, okay, well, we'll just keep buying raw milk. And then when we run out, we'll have to go to the grocery store. And Lifeline actually has, and they're a local producer, they have unhomogenized. So it's the cream on top is what you want. Because then it's not, it hasn't been homogenized and like, generally pasteurized.
Yeah, I like to kind of chew my milk a little bit. I like the thicker stuff.
And I like just straight whipping cream, like cream.
That's what I really like.
In my coffee. Yeah. Every morning.
Yeah, I like the flavor. It's, you know, I think people, because, you know, all that stuff got taken out, so milk, store milk is different. You know, the pasteurized, mm-hmm. homogenized, mm-hmm. is like the all the everything's out of it, so even like the flavor is different. So then you, mm-hmm. get like that, you know, straight from the cow milk, and with all the cream and all the good enzymes and, yeah. all the goodness in it, it does taste a little different. So I think
it
people
does.
Have a little issue with that at first, and like the chunky,
yeah,
is like,
my, he is.
Yeah,
he does it.
Yeah, I've.
Yeah, my wife's had a hard time with the
I'm not
raw.
It,
yeah,
no. I'm not against it, but it's just, yeah, I gotta develop that taste for it.
It's a
taste
palate,
of it,
yeah.
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 I got kind of lucky because, you know, my one side of my family, both side of the family, that there's some dairies in my family, like great grandparents. So like, I don't remember it too well, but like, so it, as a really really young kid, I was on more of the dairy, you know, fresh from the cow milk, and then I got older and, you know, got store bought and convenient.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think it wasn't as big of a change to go back to that, and it seemed like, I don't know, just seemed like more people, like small towns, had that, like, just, you know, their,
yeah,
own cow,
the accessibility,
you know?
To,
yeah,
it, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, that seemed to be, you know, easier transition for me to go to that. Man, there's something else I was gonna say about milk, but brain kind of wandered.
Yeah, you're good.
Oh, man.
Yeah, milk is good.
Yeah,
yes. Milk and mushrooms, but
oh, that's what you talk about, like,
yeah.
You know, folks who seem to have like kind of some kind of dairy issues, like dairy intolerance, and I think it takes a little bit to go when you go back to, and I'm talking about my realm, so, you know.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Take it with a grain of salt, but it seems like once they go back to like a normal milk that has all the good enzymes and comes straight from the cow, then their stomach gets a little funky at first because they're not used to it, and then once they get used to it, then all of a sudden they can, mm-hmm. do like the butter and cheese,
yep.
and milk, you know, without having an issue. When before they'd be like lactose intolerant, you know.
Well, and yeah, and it's the same thing because I'm a celiac, but oh, yeah. I found out that I'm a celiac for like the super highly hybridized wheat.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I can eat and corn wheat till the cows come home.
Oh,
and yeah. At first when I took it really slow because I have like the next morning reaction where I have arthritis really bad, and all my joints, I feel like I got the flu.
Really?
Super, yeah, super sensitive,
yeah,
to it.
She gets it bad.
And even, yeah. from like seasoning packets that have it. So the littlest amount of wheat really affects me. But then we started buying this and corn wheat, and I started with just a little cookie, and I was like, okay, we're gonna see how this goes. And I was like,
crossed.
You know, I had a little bit of, you know, gas and intestinal, like, but then once I started eating it more, I was like, oh, okay, no, I can have pizza again,
yeah.
I can have brownies again, I can have cookies, I can have all the stuff that you're not supposed to be eating. You know, and just like sourdough bread and whatnot. And
yeah,
so I think it like goes back to like finding the food that hasn't been processed or hybridized to the point where we're at now, because that's where why we're in the trouble we are, is,
yeah.
because we've bastardized our food
totally
into,
yeah.
something that's not how it's supposed to be, and,
yeah.
we're getting sick because of it. That's the thing that's like so frustrating.
It is so frustrating, and so many people I know that have left the country to go like to more remote, like third world,
mm-hmm.
like parts of Mexico, and they were, you know, like one of my friend's daughters has a like a celiac gluten intolerance or something, I can't remember, but it's really extreme. Like,
mm-hmm.
she was down there eating like corn tortillas and all this stuff that she couldn't, and breads and stuff that she couldn't eat stateside, you know.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like wild, and even the little tiniest bit like affects you and affects her, and then,
mm-hmm.
even for me, like there's something that was in like taco seasoning, and then it's in a ton of seasonings, because like same thing, like just even a trace amount, because I was like, maybe I'll just do a tiny bit of taco seasoning, and like trying different ones, like whatever it is, I still can't figure out exactly,
yeah.
what the ingredient is, but it'll wreck me, even a tiny bit of it. It's,
yeah.
nuts, you know?
And that's when you go back and like break down the food that's causing the issue, and it's like you take a little, but it hurts, and it's not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We don't want to put ourselves through, you know, that kind of pain and whatnot. And
yeah,
then,
totally, because usually the sleep, you know, because,
mm-hmm.
like you said, the GI,
yeah.
stress.
Yeah.
Actually brings me to a point I want to ask you. If you were going to tell people why they should consume mushrooms as part of their diet, what would you say?
Definitely gut health.
Good health, yeah.
Cardiovascular, immune. I mean, the list goes on and on. But the overarching, like every mushroom is going to help your immune system, which in turn helps other facets of your body. So I'm a big proponent on, if you're not going to be eating mushrooms every day, take tinctures, because it's,
yeah.
just a concentrated form of tinctures.
Folks,
yeah. Our Graham Grace that we just released at the first of the year.
Awesome.
And that's a whole body tincture. Anytime you're like going to be taking tincture, make sure that they're from the fruiting bodies, and they're double extracted.
Oh.
There's some products on the market that we're finding out that don't have good ethics, like every other industry, the,
yeah.
pharmaceutical,
yeah.
industry. There's good players, bad players, good actors, bad actors, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
So you have to
be
cutting
corners.
Yeah, and they'll use mycelium on grain. to make their tinctures. So then you get the compounds from like whatever grain, like wheat.
Oh.
Yeah. And then.
And it's probably not on the bottle. So if you do
nope,
have like
because
some kind of
wheat allergy, it's supposed
to be. It's supposed to be.
Legally, they are supposed to put on their label that if it's. That it has that it's made from
fruiting body or from mycelium.
Yeah,
and
yeah. And some yeah. will put made from mushrooms.
Yeah, to get around that.
Yeah, so but like that bag of like that grain, inoculated grain. Yeah, yeah, they'll just take that
and tincture it.
Tincture.
So they haven't gone through the whole process of actually making the fruiting body.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few studies that I'm watching right now. As the research comes out, they're. Highly backed that like mycelium does not have the same nutrient density as mushrooms.
Yeah,
so until they're, and I'm one of those, I won't quote any kind of research papers or anything until they're double blind and peer reviewed back studies.
Yeah.
Only because there's so many studies out there that you can tweak any information to make it your own or
yeah.
like to fit your agenda. So
totally. Yeah.
I definitely try to, I'm very picky about quoting like John Hopkins, any study that's come out from them, and like Stanford and Harvard, those are pretty solid studies because their method and their ethics are very solid,
yeah.
and they have a long history of having really good research. But yeah, they're it's like infuriating because people are putting medicine out there that isn't true medicine, and they're doing it for profit.
Yeah.
And that's the whole pharmaceutical side of things, and why I get so revved up about big pharma and just
yeah.
the pharmaceutical side is because we're supposed to be treating the ailment, not treating the symptoms of the ailment.
Yeah.
And that's what we really need to be focusing and directing our money toward. And the only way we can do that is unfortunately going in a roundabout way and
yeah.
doing holistic medicine and
yeah.
doing whole body health.
And yeah, and be really in tune with yourself for
yeah.
sure, you know, and reaching out and looking for things. Because, you know, like you said, it's pharma's coming to your TV and your
oh.
radio and stuff. So you're
yeah.
hearing all that. But like to find like these routes, you know, hopefully like my podcast is helping out. And then you guys, you know,
oh, yeah.
with what you guys
yeah.
doing, hopefully a podcast soon, you know, like
mm-hmm.
get the
yeah.
information out. It's hard to get, you know.
It is.
Yeah.
And big pharma, I mean, they're unfortunately 90% of their budget is put toward marketing.
Yeah.
That should be a red flag in itself. Like their marketing budget is sometimes 3 times as much as the actual research budget.
Oh.
There's something wrong there.
Yeah, like, just on an ethics level
yeah.
in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And it's like bring that like human to human. Like I want to help and I want people to get health from that help
yeah.
instead of like, we could be losing our butt on tinctures and I'd still be producing them because I myself believe in what the power of mushrooms can do.
Yeah.
And it
gets, not to cut you off, but it gets frustrating too because, and I have talked to people that have tried it. Like, it really didn't do anything or I'm just kind of, but there's so much on the market that's just bogus.
Yeah.
And
crap
so it makes the mushroom industry kind of look bad because
mm-hmm.
you know they're pushing all this tincture, oh, we're supposed to do this and this, but it doesn't do nothing and it's just, you know, a big joke.
Yeah,
it's not a joke, it's just a lot of these companies are putting crap out, you know. When you go to buy like mushroom tincture and stuff, you really need to know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How it is extracted, if it's the fruiting body or just mycelium. If it says just mushrooms, steer clear of it.
Yeah, don't do it, huh?
No.
Yeah.
If it says fruiting body, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're just trying to make a quick buck and making the mushroom industry, you know, look stupid.
Yeah, I could definitely see it, especially going online. It's just like someone can see like a window of opportunity, and like you're saying, instead of going through the whole process,
mm-hmm.
they take, you know, the just what you call it,
mycelium, the
yeah.
grain blocks.
Oh, dang. Hold on one second.
You're good.
Oh, sorry about that, guys.
It's all good.
So, we leave off?
Oh, we were talking about mycelium and tinctures.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
then, yeah.
And cutting the core and the, yeah.
Yeah, so the we were showing Luke earlier and did a little intro about it. But
yeah,
the grain block is what I actually use to inoculate these. So, it's just spreading that mycelium further. People take that and make tinctures out of it. And there's gluten that will be extracted because gluten is a sugar. So with tinctures, all we're trying to do is isolate the fat-soluble and the water-soluble compounds that are good for the body. And those are just, like, polysaccharides are just carbs. They're just a form of carb.
Oh.
But not, like, the other thing we need to do as a society is through nutrition and through education is, like, not all sugars are bad and not all bad sugars are carbs and not all carbs are bad sugars. And, you know, we need to, like, reframe how we talk about our food. So polysaccharides that are in mushrooms are really, really low carb sugars that your body needs. And then all of the mushrooms that are in tinctures are also adaptogenic. So that means that your body will, the mushrooms will sense what your body needs, and your body will tell those mushrooms what compounds it needs to deliver to a certain area.
Oh, whoa.
So yeah, if you have inflammation, when you take a tincture, and tinctures are just concentrated mushrooms, in a bioavailable form. So you take those tinctures, and then your body will tell, hey, I have, you know, inflammation all over. So the compounds in those mushrooms will target that inflammation. So whether it's in your joints, if it's, you know, in visceral fat, inflammation causing, you know, pressure on your organs, it'll tell the mushrooms that, hey, I need this, give it to me, give it to me.
Yeah.
And then your body uses it. Oh. So it's a whole fascinating world that's coming about, like, through the study of mushrooms, is like the adaptogenetic properties of them. And then you have the whole, like, cognitive health and the blood-brain barrier that it is able to go through.
Yeah.
Tinctures are one of the only forms, and this is kind of woo-woo science, if you will, but it's delivered in a form that your body doesn't, it makes it completely 100% bioavailable on the contact. So as soon as you put it in your mouth or in your tea, your coffee, whatever, you consume it, it goes to work.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be digested. It doesn't need to be absorbed. It just starts to work.
That's
so
huge.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Yeah. And there's no side effects. I mean, there's some people, like, I'm super sensitive to reishi and cordyceps.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if I have a lot of it, I get super, like, jittery, almost like a cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah.
But that's why I've been super cautious of putting, like, milligrams of both of those in our tinctures that I know aren't, unless you're buying straight cordyceps or reishi from us, that's,
yeah,
like, 100%.
Then
you know, then you're going to, yeah, maybe do one dropper instead of two.
Yeah, test it out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some people that are super sensitive to lion's mane, and they get almost like a buzz from lion's mane. So we really have to know your body and start slow with tinctures and then work your way up. And Mike, I don't know how he does it. It almost disgusts me. He takes it straight up in
really?
His mouth.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I'm super sensitive to alcohol because there is alcohol. Alcohol is one of the only forms, yeah, that you can actually extract fat-soluble compounds. So we use vodka to extract those.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And he just takes it straight up. I have to put mine in coffee, and then you can't even taste it.
Yeah.
Or your tea.
It just reminds me of my old high school days.
It's back to taking a shot.
Yeah, just a shot of vodka.
And, it's not even a shot. It's like an eighth of a shot that you end up getting. But if you are super sensitive or you're trying to stay away from alcohol, if you do it in a hot liquid, so if you put it in your coffee or your tea, it allows that alcohol to evaporate.
Oh, yeah.
You can also sprinkle tinctures in food. People don't realize that you can add it to stir fries and the alcohol evaporate and you get all those polysaccharides. It's a good way for, you know, if you want to introduce it to your kids and, you know, as a parent, that's your decision.
Yeah.
We're not saying tincture your kids, but we do ours and, you know, we've seen great benefits from it.
Yeah, I think it helps a ton because, you know, just for me, it's as a parent and just for, like, in my own health, I think about defensive, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's like, you don't know what you get out in the world, you know, like, you go get a glass of water somewhere, it might have fluoride or something else in it that you don't want to put in your body, but
yeah,
you don't know it, you know, so, like,
yeah,
the best thing you do is, you know, have a good defense already, a good offense, right, a good defense.
Yeah, well,
Kevin.
Both.
Both ways, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so tinctures are really good form to get, like, really good amino responses from the tinctures that your body can just, like, it's just a powerhouse for protecting your cells.
Just this time of year, you're not getting as much sunlight and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And
I think our bodies, too, are just, they are craving health
more than ever.
To no end right now, because our health is diminishing generation after generation after generation. And the diseases are going up. Our bodies are still craving that health. And it's, with the tinctures, as soon as you take it, we know so many people that it's just like, whoa, I just started taking this and I can already feel it and this and that. But it's just, your body wants it so bad because it's been neglected of real solid health mm-hmm. for years now.
And it's just, yeah, it's the way our food system, unfortunately, is. I mean, and I've really gotten this last month on a kick, and I think I was kind of on it when you showed up last time.
Oh, good.
But it's like the sugar that's in our food. Dr. Lunsting, I probably said his name wrong, but he's a scientist is starting to come through with Dr. Huberman. He did a podcast with him, and he like just goes like after the food industry.
Oh, really?
And it's like really encouraging that somebody's stepping up finally and being like, you know what they're doing is wrong. The amount of sugar, this is what it's doing to your body on a cellular level, and reframing health around like our cell health and our cell health. And like just the overall health, instead of looking at like, oh, you know, I have XYZ disease, how do I treat that with a pharmaceutical? Instead of like, oh, well, your diet is 90% processed crap. Let's back off of that. And then that goes into the whole realm of like, you know, if you buy something in the grocery store, how far did that food take to travel, and how many nutrients, you know, did it diminish getting in through transportation?
Yeah.
So buy local, right? Because that means that your carrot that you're buying from, you know, I'll just throw out Winterkiss because we love them.
Yeah,
if you're buying, you know, your carrot from Winterkiss, it could be a couple days old, a couple weeks old. And then the ones you're buying from the supermarket could be months old, if not longer.
Yeah, and just covered in preservatives. And
pesticides. Yeah, and the fact that they're now, like, using, like, toxic gas to preserve our apples is, and that's just, like, why were we not informed of this when it started? That's the part of the regulation we need to be, like, if they're adding something to even our fresh vegetables at any point through from harvest, even pre-harvest, we should be informed about it.
Absolutely, yeah. And there should be, like, a vote. Like, are you guys cool with this? No.
No, we're not.
Yeah. And it's just, like, the trust thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's, like, and I guess we all, like, generationally, and, you know, kind of like you're talking about, like, with our decline, it's, like, we all just, like, trust, you know, that the government and whoever's in charge of our food and all that are making the right decisions mm-hmm. for us. But it's not, and it's proving with all the diseases they're cropping up. And also, like, with the mushroom intake, in my observations and just a little bit I know of, you know, life and how we are as humans these days and mm-hmm. just my own health, no one's consuming mushrooms like they should. You know, mushrooms are, like, mm-hmm. on their pizza things like that, where I think tribally and, you know, at a smaller, I guess, like, in our tribal levels, like, our ancestors, you know, mm-hmm. generations ago were, you know, foragers. So it's like, you're getting probably a ton of mushrooms throughout the year.
Yeah.
And now we're, like, zero pretty much, you know. Like, if I didn't have it in my diet, I eat a little bit with my dinner, but, like, especially now with this tincture and then having some that I throw in my coffee, like, not much for mushrooms. And I know a lot of people that are mm-hmm. friends and family that that have zero mushrooms pretty much, unless it's a pizza, you know, or pasta or something.
And I think
mushrooms are more of a gourmet. And it depends on the mushroom, but they're more of on the gourmet menu to just how they taste.
Yeah.
You know, and, oh, I can put it with this Alfredo, and that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and you can get some specialty like Lion's Mane that kind of has that crab taste to it and all that.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily eat it for the health benefit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, some of them are, I don't know if they want to be cool or what. It's like, oh, we got this special little mushroom we're going to put in this dish and this and that. But it's like there's so much more to it. There's so much more to your health through the mushrooms than
mm-hmm.
just, you know, a topping on a pizza.
Yeah.
But it's a good place to start.
That's true.
Yeah, true.
Like, I do like it on my pizza.
I mean,
throw in some other stuff.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, and then, like, too, I think a lot of people, because of the pharmaceuticals, are so used to, like a Z-Pak is the one I think about all the time because
mm-hmm.
I recently had a sinus infection. I remember, but the last sinus infection I had that I treated with a Z-Pak took, like, 3 Z-Paks. You know, so it's like, it used to be like, bam, Z-Pak it, and, you know, I'd feel good the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are expecting, you know, out of their, whatever they're taking, like, even, like, medicinal, where it's like, you probably will, and if you're, like, sensitive like us, you probably will feel, like, right away, but, like, you may not feel it for a few days. You know, you just got to get a little bit of time. And then all of a sudden, like, for me, in the beginning, it was like, especially if I, you know, had a bunch on my plate, and when I first started taking Lion's Mane, if I had a bunch
mm-hmm.
on my plate, like, stress and trying to, like, juggle a few different things, multitasking and trying to, or, like, just podcasting. And typically I have a question in the back of my head always, like, waiting for, like,
an opportunity.
And sometimes it doesn't come because, like, we'll get on something else. And
But,
like, I was having a hard time holding, like, questions in the back of my head and listening to you guys. And I started taking Lion's Mane, and all of a sudden it was like, I could feel this balance, and all of a sudden I could hold it all in my brain, and then juggle more things with clarity and without the stress. You know, like, because for me, if I'm having brain fog, which happens a lot with my medication for my Crohn's, whether it's prednisone or whatever I'm on, Remicade, like all the pharm stuff, you know, and so I get that brain fog, and then I get irritable. And then I get angry.
And frustrated.
You start cussing at yourself, but then you can't hardly cuss at yourself because you don't know how to talk.
It's just like a train wreck in my brain.
I think that's, and you know, I'm undiagnosed ADD. Everybody around me diagnosed me with ADD. And I have noticed a huge difference in like my remembrance of things. Like I could be like, oh, I need to grab the drill from the house because, you know, I took it and forgot to bring it this morning. And then I'll actually remember to grab it. And I don't put things down and then be like, wait, I just had it. I don't do that anymore. Like I used to, and or leave the sink on and have the sink overflow. Like I don't do that anymore, and it's starting to get more and more with just like, you know, taking the full spectrum grade and grace, or if I'm taking like just straight lion's mane. And then the energy level too with hormones. My hormones are starting to regulate more the more I take tinctures. And as a female, that's hugely important, especially with our cycle and whatnot. Because that's a whole other tangent we could get on. But and then just like, I'm not as irritable or testy with my kids. Like I don't have, and I'm not the most perfect parent by any means, but I don't have those like like internal rage moments where I'm like, I have to go in my closet for just a hot second.
Take a breath.
I'm gonna be right back, kids. No, I don't have that. It's like just pretty easy flow, and then the cordyceps are huge for like your stamina and libido. So if you have any libido issues, cordyceps is really good for that. And just like overall like energy throughout the day. It's just, you don't have that huge, and I take mine with coffee and I don't have that huge, like, and I don't know if it's something to do, and I'd really like to get like down to the science of it, but I don't know if like the cordyceps are just holding back that caffeine, like, hit that your brain gets, and then you kind of get a little jittery. It's more just a steady throughout the day. And I used to be, and he'll tell you, I used to drink coffee like by the pot all day long, and now one, maybe two cups in the morning, that's all I need.
See, those little things you might not even notice, you know, unless you're like thinking about it, like, because like, and, and I didn't even think about it until you started talking about just like the daily memory thing. Like if I had something and I was doing something, I'd like write it on my hand, or if I had something to do, you know, like if I was like milk on the way home, I'd be like, milk would, you know, my right hand or my left hand would be all ink, you know, like notes that I need to like keep track of throughout the day, you know, right? Like I haven't even thought about it until just now that I haven't written anything on my hand in a long, long time, because I haven't really needed to, because I've been taking lion's mane and healthier and not, and sugar, you know. And,
oh, sugar is terrible. Yeah. Sugar is a whole,
so bad.
It's so bad for everybody, like from the moment you're out of the womb to the day you die, like sugar is terrible. And we like sugar. Yeah. We all like sugar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We like a good brownie
sure.
with a glass of milk.
Yeah, especially on the holidays.
Yeah, and this time of year, you know, you're confined. I'd definitely eat way better during the summer, but that's also because of the accessibility to, you know, fresh food.
Yeah.
So you have to give yourself, you know, grace in that. But just knowing, like, that product you're buying off the shelf, how much sugar is in it, and not being aware of it, that's the part that, like, I read the back of labels every time I pick up something that's not on the perimeter.
Yeah.
Like, if it's not on the perimeter of the grocery store and I pick something up, I'm like, holy cow, that's as much as a freaking Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. I know. And the stuff that you don't expect. I remember someone told me that a long time ago, like, everything has sugar. And it was like, you're right. Like, everything. You know, even, like, something that, like, is more of a salty
crackers. Crackers actually have a lot of sugar in them.
Yeah, cool.
And it's because the food industry has used that as power, because then you're addicted. And
yeah, you're like, man, these cookies or these crackers are really good. It's more like a cookie.
Your brain is,
I remember in fourth grade, I had this really cool teacher. His name was Mr. Tomei. And he had us all bring in like a wrapper from whatever. And then he also had us bring in like a wrap that had like fructose or sucralose. Did I say that right? Fructose and sucralose?
Mm-hmm.
And because none of us knew what it was. So we're like, all right, you know, bring it in. And so, like, he's telling us, yeah, that's, you know, sugar, fructose, sucralose. And then he's like, gave us a little tip. He's like, I'm not telling you, like, you know, you got to do a bunch of, especially fourth grade. It's like, probably not going to retain anything anyway.
Yeah.
If you can, you know, the smaller the ingredient, less the better. You know, yep. That was in like fourth grade. And I still hear people talk about that today. And it's like, that always stuck with me. And then the amount of sugar too, like with the fructose. I'm like, even as a kid, I'm like, man, why isn't it? It's not, you know, that doesn't sound like natural fructose, you know?
So yeah. And sucralose doesn't, it's not, you can't find it in nature. It's lab made. And then high fructose corn syrup is taking glucose and I think sucralose or fructose and putting them together on a molecular level. So it's all in us. It's not in nature. Yeah. Like it's done in a lab. Yeah. I can't remember. It might have been Dr. Lusting too that was talking about how you can purchase these things and how, you know, if you go to a grocery store, because you can get sucralose. Sucralose is naturally forming. But you buy it in a container this big versus high fructose corn syrup this big, and it's the same price.
Oh, really?
And that should tell you also, like, this is highly processed. This is a little less processed.
Yeah, that's the problem with the convenience, right? Like, I was hearing someone talk recently, like, the dollar menu, you know, for all these poor communities, it's like, they can't afford to go get the good food, so they're going to go to the good, you know, McDonald's and you know, get the dollar menu.
They've made it so easy to, you know, when you're, and we're all scrapping by. That's the thing with the way the economy is.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
We're trying, I mean, I never thought I would see the day where you'd walk in and you pay almost $10 for a gallon of milk.
Yeah.
Like, nuts. That's insane.
It is insane. Or,
you know, my phone's ringing.
Oh, no,
or, you know.
Do you answer it?
I'll shut it off.
No, you don't. I just didn't know if you, it was like an emergency or something.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I
mean,
didn't I tell you to turn that
on? Keep you waiting.
Yeah.
No biggie. It's all part of the experience.
Oh,
cool. That's all I was worried about. I was like, make sure the house isn't burned down.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, kind of, you know, wrap up kind of like all this that we're talking about too. Is just like, you know, you really got to take it as an individual level to, like, you know, invest in your own health.
And oh, absolutely. Else.
And then now, like you said, with the cost of living, holy cow! Like,
yeah, it's a huge stress, and that's why we've really taken in consideration like where our bottom line is, where we can pay our bills, pay ourselves to make, because we have a family to support. Yeah. We're not going to lie about that.
No.
Like, yeah. We got to pay ourselves somehow.
Yeah,
and the work. So there's like that, because we could be charging a heck of a lot more than we are.
Yeah.
And that's just on principle alone. Mm-hmm. We want to make it accessible to everybody. And even our tincture line, like the amount of small batch of love that goes into our tincture, it's really affordable. And it's, you know, for a bottle of that size, it's 35 and the 2 ounce is 25.
Yeah. And that's, you know, some of the big brands that I've taken in the past, like I think Paul Stamets got his line and I think that's way more reasonable than his.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Not to say, you know, his.
Oh, and yeah. His. Just, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And we want to make it accessible. And as we get bigger and the business grows, and our processes get quicker, we'll be able to, you know, produce more and keep that, you know, that price line where any family can come up and buy mushrooms from us.
Yeah, because we're all better together. I mean, I know that was like a huge thing we kept hammering home in the last podcast is like community, and it really is. I mean, like we're strong together, not as strong as individuals. You know?
Oh, so, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, and being able to partner with, you know, some of the CSAs and as add-ons too, just to extend our stretch has been like a blessing.
Yeah.
Because it's allowed us to find people that maybe don't go to the farmers markets or whatnot, and it just allows them to be able to buy mushrooms and have them delivered to their house, and
yeah.
It's great.
And I've, you guys maybe mentioned this before, but do you guys work with any of the local restaurants yet, or you guys
yeah,
we work with Cater Table here in Stevensville with Phil, and then Plunk in Missoula, and then we've picked up
Mishi Bar, the ramen bar, and then we work with Western Montana Producers Co-op.
Oh, awesome.
Or Growers Co-op.
Basically all throughout the state.
Oh.
So we'll be distributing. We'll be in Helena, Great Falls, Kalispell, but I mean all over.
Yeah.
And as you, because you guys are the same health conscious as I am, when I see like Swift Current Farms, you know, and especially since I know you guys, I'm like more amped about it. But like, even if I didn't know you guys, I'm like, oh shoot, these guys are from Stevensville, you know, like, like I'm definitely gonna get this, or like more pumped about like a food item I might grab that has like, you know, on the menu has you guys on a listing of like mushrooms from, you know.
And I think that's something that's really, I mean, it's becoming a movement nationwide, but the stretch of Montana that we're in, you know, the Missoula County, and then I would even say Lake County down to, we're very, very focused on local and very supportive of local people. And I think that that's,
I do think we need to get the word out a little more, to try to get more local farms noticed.
Yeah.
Because there are a ton of small farms.
A lot.
All over. You know, and like with the milk, or even like what's your face that makes the soap.
And, oh, Lily of the Valley.
Yeah, and just those small folks that are either growing or making local products that are healthy for you.
Yeah.
And it's just those little things that try to get the farms noticed and get more people to be aware that we do produce a lot of local food.
Yeah.
Even, you know, some of the ranchers with the grass-fed beef.
Yep.
And, which is becoming big.
And, you know, just to try to get, and we've kind of racked our brains on, you know, if we want to start some sort of a, like a farm, like a little coalition.
I wouldn't say co-op, because we don't want to be like an aggregator. We don't want to be like, but like, I don't know, a community-based like team. It's the only way to
just
really
to help each other and get the word out.
For like a podcast and stuff would be good too.
That's definitely where we, and we've thrown around podcasts of like, oh, do we want to keep it just farm, like mushroom-based or farm-based? And then it's like, well, I can go on for days and days and days about local food. Yeah. So do we want to tailor it to that? And then Mike's like, well, why don't we just do both?
Yeah, totally.
100%. So, I was like, okay.
Well, so, we're really trying to get the word out for all these local farms and stuff like that. Because from where I came from, I didn't know. And I was basically, I was pretty much born. I was born in the Bitterroot. Family's been in the Bitterroot forever. And then I went to Missoula and stuff. And kind of lost that real connection. Always had a connection, but and then coming back here and starting this, it's like, oh, you know, he's a farmer and he's got that little farm, and it's like, holy cow, I didn't realize there's so many people producing, you know, local food and products and stuff like that. It's like, wow, we need to get more people to know him. Really get the word out.
People behind it, because I think that you see somebody's logo, and it's cool. Okay, it's Bitterroot grown or whatever. It's Montana made. But until you get to know, like, the person or the family behind it, there's, like, a little bit of that disconnect. It's like, oh, it's just another person that grows locally here. Like, oh, I see them at the farmer's market. Yeah. But, like, oh, this is why they're doing it. Yeah. This is their passion behind it. Yeah. That's what needs to get highlighted.
And how hard they work
just to produce
food for people.
Yeah, totally. Like the whole family, from like little kiddos to, you know, grandparents. Harvest or whatever, you know. And
like me and Sarah were talking this morning, coming to work. It was before work, just when we got here anyway. I mean, it's 20-some degrees below zero. And luckily for our farm, it's all indoors.
Yeah.
All the other farmers and ranchers out there, they're out there working. Yep. When people are closing down because it's too cold and, you know, we're just going to close down for the day, they don't close down.
You've got animals depending on you.
So they're working more, you know, make sure they're out there, make sure the animals are all right, you know, and feeding and all that. Make sure the water's not icing over.
That's what we're doing with our chicken and ducks right now. Yeah. I'm out there like 3-4 times a day.
Breaking the ice.
I'm like, I'm sorry, girls. Let me go thaw this out.
Fresh.
Yeah, exactly.
But they need our support.
Totally.
They do.
And I think we really need to start the conversation of, unfortunately, the lack of support that some of our farmers are facing through legislation, with like the whole raw milk thing. The raw milk, and I keep going back to it because it's just, it flabbergasts me why technology advances, such as like the stainless steel, like milking stuff that they use, yeah, is not what it used to be when people, they used to use like galvanized pots, that was just harbor bacteria. Yeah. That's not like it is now. And now we have, you know, chemicals or cleaning agents that help mitigate, you know, the toxic loads of, you know, the processes.
Yeah.
So we need to be highlighting that. And then the lack of legislation support for those farmers that are producing raw, whatever, raw milk, raw cheeses, raw dairy, raw, or, you know, organic food, but don't have the money to pay for the licensing of it. We really need to start the conversation of why are our farmers not being supported more by not only our county government, but also our state government through funding.
And that, man, that one's a subject that I get a little upset about, because it's such a big thing. You know, like you said, like there's all those little things too that happen, you know, and then you're really just crushing a whole family or whole community, because that community or family, like, support, you know, gets supported by the community or whatever, you know, with their farming or dairy, you know.
Yep.
Like, but then also, like, if you go to, like, the big farms that are, you know, these giant producers, and they're giant pesticides, and the runoff goes in the river, and then the animals, it's such a big...
It's like, it's like turning a blind eye to, like, animal neglect. And I totally support, like, factory farms. I grew up in the Midwest on a farm, and there was factory farms all over. And heavy pesticide use. And I used to swim in the rivers that were just laden. Hindsight, probably shouldn't be doing that, but at the time, you know, we were just being kids, and we didn't know what we knew in the 90s and the early 2000s like we do now, that stuff doesn't go away and it's actually severely toxic for you. And that kind of, that conversation behind, like, why are our farmers being regulated so heavy? And yet I think it was like, it's easier to buy a gun than it is to buy raw milk.
That's nuts.
And there's something like, it's easier to buy XYZ than it is, you know, pasture raised, unwashed eggs from your, you know, your gal down the street. It's that kind of stuff that we need to start the conversation of. And the only way that big pharma, big industry is going to listen is when we vote for with our dollar. Yeah. But we can't vote for our dollar if they're not even being allowed, like, the farmer has good practices and, you know, care about their animals and care about their well-being. They're not even giving a chance to let us buy their stuff.
Yeah,
that's the part that's, like, infuriating.
We've had multiple discussions because we've had a little dealings with, like, the USDA. It is so surprising on how little support that small farmers get. We, as a collective, are trying to help out the community, be there, you know, grow good food, try to make a living, but it seems like our government is so focused on the big producers that have a lot of money that they can then go and maybe fund campaigns
that kind of
stuff.
Lobbyists.
Where at the same time, the small farmers are struggling and just to live and to supply food for their community.
Yeah, 100%. And too busy to have a voice, so they don't have a voice really. And they're too busy to, you know, like, to have something like this or get the word out in whatever way they can. Even if they can, they're kind of getting probably strangled, you know, by the big industry. And,
absolutely.
You know,
And I mean, I would rather pay twice as much for, you know, a pork chop if I know that that farmer loves their animal and is treating their animal fine. But financially, is that feasible? Like, that's the part that I don't know if the answer is, like, subsidizing local farmers to help offset the price. Like, I think that that's a really good direction, that our local and state and federal government is at least paying through our taxes that we already established and are already paying the farmers to do what they're doing. And I think that, I mean, that's what's happening overseas right now in Germany and France, where the farmers are protesting for a reason.
I saw that,
pissed because they have been like so many regulations and basically getting taxed for producing, and I don't want to see our country go there. I don't want farmers just to get, you know, unfortunately, I mean, the average age of farmers, I think, is still 70 and are at retirement age, and they can't,
yeah.
or they're about ready to, and there's nobody to fill that gap.
Yeah.
Because you look and you have, and there's nothing against YouTube, you know, people making money off of YouTube, it's great, whatever.
Yeah.
But you, there's that generational, like, do I really want to work this hard for my dollar or just make videos about stupid stuff and make even more? And it's it's just a societal thing. It's, I mean, it's not good, bad, or indifferent of it, but we, there needs to be some kind of subsidy to the people that are producing our food and staying away from lab created.
We're back on.
Cool.
Yeah, start with the disclaimer you're talking about if you want.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I'd like to tell everyone out there, Sarah and I would like to tell everyone that we do not sell psychedelic mushrooms. We do not grow psychedelic mushrooms. We will not. Let me back up a touch.
Yeah.
We don't sell psychedelic mycelium or anything like that because it is still extremely illegal.
Yeah, it's federally illegal.
Whether we agree with psychedelics or not.
And them as medicine.
As medicine, that is a whole other subject. But we just want to let people know that we don't sell it.
We don't produce it. We don't sell it.
We get asked all the time
mm-hmm.
if we sell or if we can get them psychedelic mushrooms.
Yeah.
And even if we could, we wouldn't.
Yeah, because it's putting us at risk. At our mission. That's
Totally. Yeah, because you guys are just pushing health, and you know, eventually, I think we'll get there. You know, like
we will.
About, the benefits of it, and we talked about it a little bit last time, I think. And you know, like with head trauma, depression, all that. Oh, that's what you were saying something about health earlier.
Yeah.
I was thinking like inflammation, and it circled back nicely. Talking about all the inflammation and like depression and all the other like kind of like chemical imbalances you get from like the modern day diets, and then like where something like. You know, this tincture with seven different mushrooms?
Yep, that one has six.
Six different mushrooms,
yeah.
So, like, I mean, just all the, like you said, inflammation seeking and reducing, compounds that come in mushrooms?
Yeah.
Like, or, chemical, I guess, would it be?
Yeah, well, it's compounds. They're polysaccharide. I mean, there's a whole, we could do a whole podcast on the science behind mushrooms, but for,
that'd
like, just.
One I just
like, the nitty-gritty of mushrooms is just, they help your overall health.
Yeah.
Like, and then even playing in with psychedelics, you know, even though, you know, they are highly illegal and there's more research backing their benefits of it, it needs to be treated like medicine and needs to have proper research to back that in order to help individuals, because there are numerous studies with like PTSD and psychedelics and emotional trauma and whatnot that they're showing very good improvement through one like guided trip. It's not that we're against self-medication or for self-medication or anything like that, but there is that premise of like, if it doesn't fit within our mission, we're not going to endorse it. Until the research comes out and you know it's federally recognized as medicine, then we'll maybe touch on it. But as of right now, the mushrooms we are growing are so medicinal heavy that
and we've talked about psychedelics as far as growing them and stuff, and she is on the registry to be certified to grow it,
not administer it, just to grow
grow it. But you know, we would only sell to like the universities or study groups or you know psychiatrist, whatever.
Yeah, psychotherapist.
Not street corner kind of stuff.
No.
Like that.
And we might get to
dead concerts.
Yeah, exactly. And we might get to a point where, you know, it's like the marijuana industry where it just took some growing pains and for us to figure out regulation. Because, you know, it is a psychoactive, you know, compounds within psychedelics that can have negative effects on people, just like marijuana.
Yeah.
Or if you really want to go down it, just like food. So there needs to be a wider education and research that goes along with it. But yeah, as of right now in 2024, we do not grow, distribute, or have any access to any kind of psychedelics. So
yeah, no, I think it's important to get that out there too. I mean, but yeah, like you said, all the other wonderful mushrooms you guys do grow. I mean, you know, we're talking flavor, health benefits. It's such a great plant.
Yeah.
So like, you know, even just by itself. And then, like I said, down the road, you know, if the medicinal psilocybin industry kind of starts to take off, and I think it does, like you guys were kind of saying, needs a little bit more structure, because like you guys were talking earlier, like it, you know, if you go to, like, I think there's some place in Mexico I was reading about where you can go in and it's like you have a doctor, you have like a
psychotherapist.
Psychotherapist. So you get like a team of people that are helping you get through something, you know, and with, you know.
And that's the way it should be treated.
Yeah.
Because it is, it, I view it as a gift from nature that was given to us that needs to be, regulation isn't the right word, because then you go down the, oh, people are just trying to make a buck. And there's so much like language that can be transferred from the like, big pharma that's really negative. Yeah. But there definitely needs to be an appropriate amount of guidance through like the healing process. And that's when you surround yourself with people that know how, that's what they've done. That's what they've studied. That's how they have that gentle guidance through it. Because I'll be the first to tell you, a bad trip is a bad trip and you don't ever want to do it again. But that's not to mitigate, like, if it would have been in a different circumstance or in a different environment, that there wouldn't have been healing involved with that.
Yeah, like, you know, tying to that too, like, historically, as tribal, you know, we're all tribal people at one point, and every tribe has some kind of ceremony, whether it's peyote or what's the one that people are always talking about in South America, where it's shaman and
I know what you're talking about.
There's always every region has it. With a big group gathering community, and there's people there, like the shaman's there to help guide and make sure you're safe and administer the right amount of whatever the substance is, you know, and help you along, like you said, and to hopefully prevent something bad happening. And if it does, to be there to help you it not be so bad, hopefully.
Yeah.
In a controlled environment, like, you know.
Because there are so many benefits to it.
Even through microdosing that they found.
Be responsible.
That.
And, you know, use it the right way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's there's a lot of history with, like, not even just psychedelics or psilocybin or anything, but the use of mushrooms in healing practices, that they think that microphobia came back to when, because women naturally were the nurturers, were the healers, and in either prehistoric tribes or really early tribal cultures, they would use mushrooms to help heal, whether it be lion's mane or psychedelics or psilocybin. And they would use those mushrooms to help heal people. Well, you have, maybe somebody might have seen like the administration of like psychedelics as witchcraft, and through, you know, generational, like, oh, that mushroom might make you trip, man, or it might kill you. Like, I'm not going to take a gamble. So that microphobia that comes along with it, totally understandable. But I think that once we get back to, like, the acceptance of, like, the healing powers of mushrooms on a very basic level, the further we can start the conversation of, like, not all mushrooms are going to kill you. Yeah. Not all psychedelics are going to make you trip. They might just give you, like, a chill out. Not all, you know, mushrooms are, you know, that hang on trees are non-toxic, and ones on the ground are toxic. Like, the conversation, and the more we talk about mushrooms and other foods, I think it's just going to benefit everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, more awareness, more education, and all of it, you know. And that's kind of like the, you know, one of the big things we talked about this whole podcast is just, like, more of that education and awareness thing. Like, even, you know, before my damn GoPro overheated, we were talking about, you know, like, the local farmers and stuff, and like them being too busy to have their own voice. So
yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully the conversations like this will help move that along.
Yeah.
Well, shoot, I probably wrap it up before this thing dies on me again. you guys got,
no problem.
Do we leave anything else off?
No. I mean, we could sit here and talk to Luke for hours, though.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. That was a great time. But yeah, like, during the break, we were talking about, like, the expansion that you guys are, you know, forced, you know, like, you guys don't have a choice. You're going to have to keep growing, you know, with the need, which is awesome. But I was even, like, picturing, you know, as we're, like, walking around and coming back here to set up for the podcast, I was like, I could already, like, picture, like, walking through, like, rows of, like, these, you know, your blocks in, like, in the future. I was like, man, just got a good feel about this. I'm so pumped to know you guys.
No, we appreciate it. And it's been fun. It's been an interesting journey so far. And I'm sure it's just going to get a little crazier, but...
Yeah. Every chapter has been, you know, good and bad. I mean, I don't want to say bad, but there's been challenges.
Well, having that right mindset. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like, and I guess, you know, keep around a little bit longer, but you said, you know, about like having, you guys were overproducing for a hot second and then got in touch with the person at the CSA, right?
Yeah, or the co-op. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that like made you grow a little more, right? Because all of a sudden
us in perspective. It humbled us. Yeah. It's like, oh, we aren't doing as much as we thought we were or could be doing. So,
yeah, it really opened our eyes on just the
potential.
The potential and just the amount of people that are screaming for mushrooms.
Yeah,
and he was even telling us because he didn't the guy that we're working through for the Western Montana Co-op, he didn't want to really let the cat out of the bag that there's a new mushroom producer. And so we were just kind of having little meetings and kind of getting
kind of introduction.
Getting things in line and okay, we're going to try to start, you know, this week and blah, blah, blah. And then Chef started getting a hold of him. And he's like, hey, your social media must be doing really well because I've got people calling you for your mushrooms.
That's awesome.
And we haven't said a word, you know, that they're going to be covering or anything. Mm-hmm. Or wait, I did. I made a video.
He made one video. One short video.
Yeah, and I said, Western Montana Co-op. And he said, I've got people wanting to buy it right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's like, oh, lovely. Okay.
And I'm like, go, let's go. He's really good at, like, again, humbling me and bringing me down. And like, Sarah, I know you want to do this, but it takes a month.
Yeah.
It's like, why aren't we, let's go, 500 pounds, let's go, let's go.
We can do it,
And Mike's like, no.
Racks, we're not going
to exactly. Because I was like, we can start stacking them, like, along the edges as long as we keep the floor clean. And Mike's like, no.
Well, that's a good balance, though, having that between you guys. And it shows, I mean, the chemistry you guys have just between you two is huge. Like, you know, quadrupled since I was here last time.
Yeah.
You know, and then the, like, we were talking about, like, the ceiling. Like, the sky's the limit, you know? Like,
yeah.
With you guys. And, you know, it's like a cliche, but it's so true. Like, my brain was kind of working with your guys' brain on, like, you know, local restaurants. And there's, you know, Montana as a whole, but especially in this side of Montana, on the western side, is, like, Southwest is a bunch of foodies, you know, like all those outdoorsy folks like our fresh, you know, tasty foods. So I was like, I think, you know, I knew it would be good. But then to see like it just like blow up like it started to do is awesome. Yeah.
And it's like I said, it's been fun, but it's so much stinking work. And that's one thing that people don't really realize because we've had people ask, well, why aren't there more mushroom farmers?
Mm-hmm.
And we heard or read something that actually mushroom farming is one of the most labor-intensive farming practices out there.
It sounds like
and that's why there isn't. And I think that since we are just not stopping and we're just going to keep going until we're dead.
I was just going to say because you guys don't have like a growing season, so you guys can literally work year round and work yourselves to death.
We almost have.
Yeah,
I mean, it's there's just so much work involved with it, and I think that's why we have put ourselves in this situation to be able to provide as much as we can.
And part of the reason why I was, you know, wanted to talk to you guys about that a little bit is just motivation for people who are starting off something new and like. It looks so big and like don't know exactly where it's gonna go, like with you guys and even with my podcast a little bit. And then you said you guys both were talking about it. You said the what you were working for your, what did you say, somebody like work for your
trading time for my money and then where I could actually start trading my money for my time. Because like with sterilized, like I was telling you, this to sterilize 32 blocks was taking about 16 hours a day and two pressure cookers.
Yeah.
Where we could have, I could have built that sterilizer earlier, but we needed racks. And we needed tents.
It's just prioritizing.
And the oak and the soy and all that. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, put my money over here, so I'm not going to spend the money here, but it's going to take us 16 hours a day, basically 7 days a week to sterilize.
Yep.
Yeah.
For 6 months, actually, we did it longer than that before we moved here, but for dang near a full year straight.
And most people, when they get up to producers, get up to where we're at, they're not using pressure cookers.
Yeah. And it was kind of one of those where kind of still, you know, hobby growing on this side, but trying to, you know, be a main
producer.
And reach the demand on the other side.
And so, but it's very rewarding, but yeah, it's been a lot of stinking work.
Yeah, so much, you know, but like the commitment, you know, is paying off like part of the, I don't want to grow mushrooms at all, but like the one thing I am envious about is the community that you guys have is like going to the farmer's markets and everything. Like you were talking, people just, you know, you're talking earlier about people coming up and be like, hey, yeah, I feel great. And I'll, you know, love making this dish with your guys' mushrooms. And I really like the idea of, you know, going to Missoula in early morning and setting up your
A little booth space. Cool. I mean, I'm introverted and extroverted at the same time. My social battery is completely drained and also completely stimulated at the same time when after the market.
Yeah.
So it's great, but we definitely want to keep that community feeling to the business and the farm. Even while we're hiring people, we want it to feel like a very relaxed, chilled, but hustle family feeling, no matter how big we get.
Yeah.
And that's something that early on Mike and I were very like, this is how this business is going to be set up, and we're never going to be so detached from the business that we don't have that feeling of community and family within the business.
Smart.
Because I think grounded. It does. And I think it keeps, it not only keeps us humbled, but it also keeps whoever we decide to bring on as a team member, that they know that, like, you're family, man. if something happens in your family, we want to be like a good friend that's also your boss, and that respect level's still there, but still have that, like, yeah, that good feeling of like I belong somewhere that's making a difference in our community. That's what we want.
And it seems like all these newer industries that are coming up, you know, like, you know, Black Rifle Coffee is kind of a bigger one that has exploded like in our time frame. They're still like veteran owned and veterans, and they try to keep family, you know. Like, it seems to show, you know, the quality is still staying in their coffee even though they've gotten so big. And you know, with you guys as well, you know. And then you guys just, like, improving. I mean, like, the teachers, like, keep going back. But that's so awesome and so convenient. Yeah. You know, it's so nice to be able to, like, have this, like you said, splash in your coffee. Mm-hmm. Or just take it straight up like you might. Which I'm kind of, I'm going to try, like, your style first.
Good luck to you.
Taste the medicine.
That's what he says. It's like, he goes, I know I'm taking it. And I'm like, see, and I don't want to taste it.
I might go that route, but shoot, well, I appreciate you guys. And so Swift Current Farms on Instagram, Facebook, and then podcast in the works.
YouTube.
Yeah, it'll be nice when we can actually get to marketing. Because we have such a long list of things we want to do as far as marketing and trying to get the word out, just trying to inform people.
Yeah.
But once we get things really dialed in, which probably maybe within just a few weeks we're going to probably start.
And part of that is just me. And I keep telling Mike, like, I used to work at Clearwater. Loved the job. Loved the people I worked with. But there was this underlining, I'm pressure from them, but underlining, like, anxiety that I had to hurry and, like, get home and take care of the kids so then I can go to work and commit, you know, 8 hours of my life to them and like make sure I'm doing a good job, because I'm a very very prideful person when it comes to my hard work. And then I get anxiety being at home, and now that I'm full time, I'm still like kind of like trying to figure I'm kind of lost.
When people are doing what you guys are doing though, you know? Most people are in the 9-to-5 for somebody else, you know, being the employee. And so everyone, I think everyone feels that anxiety. Me, I'm still doing that, you know, for the Forest Service.
And it's so once I'm able to kind of be like, no, you don't have to feel like you got to get everything done between 3 a.m. and 5, you know. I mean, he would make comments of like falling asleep at like 7 o'clock, you know, like at making dinner, like, oh, I'm so tired.
Like zombies.
Yeah.
That's brutal. But,
Yeah, it'll happen. We'll get more on social media, and because yeah. people are interested, and we want to bring everybody along, you know, for the journey.
So yes, like I said, so much education, so much knowledge that you guys are bringing, and just once you guys get the social media, the more the photography, because you do like a little bit out on the your other Instagram, right? Videoing and photography and stuff.
Yeah, not as much anymore. I'd like to get back into photography and stuff again, and video editing and producing and stuff, but it's just, this is my main focus right now.
Yeah, it's life right now. But I was thinking even like, just once you guys maybe have a few other people, you have a little more time, like to video a lot of the process.
He'll just be switching it and still carrying that passion and frankly, talent, because he's very, very talented in photography.
That's what I was thinking. Well, he got a lot of experience behind it. Right?
Yeah.
We talked about it a little bit last time, right?
Yeah. We're going to really start doing some cool stuff once we get time and stuff with photos and video and stuff like that. We want to put out a lot of content as far as, you know,
showing the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because there's not, unfortunately, a lot of YouTube videos online that show the really nasty part of mushroom growing. Like, things can get, even us being as clean as we are, there's just, we're growing an organism, and so there's a lot of filth and dirt that comes along with that, and we want to show that, like, no, so learn from our mistakes, don't use this kind of tubing, use this tubing.
You talked in the beginning, like, there's no like blueprint or any like guidebook, so like you guys doing that is going to be huge for other people. Yeah. Maybe they just want to do like you guys started off in the shed. Maybe they just want to do like something like something small for themselves.
So
having that kind of information from you guys is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot, well, I appreciate you guys letting me hang out with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, yeah, appreciate you coming over and chatting with us.
Anytime.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we'll do it again for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks for everybody tuning in.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.